Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Sandra Flaum is CEO of Flaum Partners, a leading healthcare consultancy focused on transformational thinking for the pharmaceutical and biotech industries. Additionally, Sandra is adjunct professor of management at the Fordham Graduate School of Business, where he founded and chairs the Fordham Leadership Forum. Sandra chairs the American Institute for Stuttering and serves on the boards of Fordham Graduate School of Business, Fisher College of Business at The Ohio State University, the Monterey Institute of International Studies, and the James Cancer Hospital at The Ohio State Medical Center. He's author of Big Shoes, How Successful Leaders Grow Into New Roles. Sandra, welcome to Edgewise.
Wonderful to be here, Dave. Thank you.
Okay, let's start with the basics. A frequent problem with companies, especially these days, is this issue of strategy execution. What can a company's leader do to ensure strategic plans get implemented?
This is one of the most difficult things that a leader has to do. And most CEOs get taken out of their job because of lack of execution. Everybody loves to come up with wonderful ideas, the breakthrough thinking, and applauding themselves, what a great day with all these breakthrough ideas that we have. And then they go back to their board games, their computers, the conference calls, all the innocuous meetings. And you know what? Nothing happens. The good ones, the Steve Jobs of the world, the Larry Bossidys of the world, he wrote one of the best execution books called Execution, focus on after you come through with a big idea, something the company needs to do. You put a Six Sigma team together to be certain that idea is executed in a very timely fashion. Leaders who have learned that have succeeded. Others who don't bother but love the big idea but nothing ever happens are eventually out. I think now the statistic is the CEOs lasted for about 3.5 years and then they're gone. The good ones, the ones who really focus on execution, will be there forever.
You know, there's another issue having to do with implementation that today's times have made even more serious. It's not a matter of taking 12 months to implement those plans, but maybe 60 days or 90 days.
Yes.
So you have to accept change and you have to move quickly.
The day of the five-year plan is over. There is no five-year plan anymore. No one has time for 5 years. The three-year plan is over. The focus now is really on a two-year plan. And that's it, because there's so much change and things are happening so quickly and the competitive environment now is so keen that there is no time. You do it now or you're done.
All right. But many leaders just aren't open to change.
Change is the most difficult thing in the world to accept. They say, what are the two biggest fears? Public speaking and death? No. Change is the biggest fear. Come in one day and there's a new boss. Come in one day and you find out your company's being acquired. It's frightening. We all talk about embracing change. It's wonderful. Who Moved My Cheese, published in 1996, is still on the bestseller list, believe it or not. It's all about change. It's great to read about, but having to do it is the most difficult thing anyone can do.
Another aspect of change is innovation and risk-taking. Now, as a leader of a company, what can you do to stimulate innovation and to overcome the fear, the risk problems that companies have?
There's always fear with innovation. My God, if I come through with this idea and it turns out to be the wrong idea, am I going to lose my job? Am I better off just sitting in my little desk, going through the 9-to-5 stuff and keeping my mouth shut? But you will see that the leaders who love to innovate are the ones who are on top. And that's how they'll stay. As long as Bill Gates is peripherally involved with Microsoft, they'll be on top. Steve Jobs never did market research. He hates market research. There's never a need. No one ever said, you know what I really need? An iPhone. No one needed an iPhone. Jobs goes to wants of people. A.G. Laffley, when he was CEO of Procter, he had a brand manager live in people's homes to ascertain what they really wanted with a mop. People hate taking that mop and having to wring it out with their hands. So he did a ring-free mop. That's how great leaders think.
Right. Okay, now let's talk a little bit about the executive who's just been hired. What is the advice there?
The first thing that one has to do to succeed is you write a 100-day plan for yourself. The 100-day plan is designed so after that 100 days, the person who hired you, human resources or senior vice president, says, you know what? The best thing I've ever done was hiring Dave. The smart ones really understand where the low-hanging fruit is, how they can succeed by going after the low-hanging fruit. That's what's really done by the great CEOs in their first 100 days.
And they obviously must know at that point where the low-hanging fruit is.
You figure it out. You figure it out very, very quickly by surrounding yourself with the insiders and outsiders to determine where that low-hanging fruit is. A good example of the first 100 days, if you remember, President Obama had six things he was going to do, and sadly, none of the six were done because it was six very, very difficult things. He did not go after the low-hanging fruit. Looking back, he knows he should have gone after one thing, not healthcare reform, which took over a year. Jobs, that was the low-hanging fruit. That's what everybody needed.
And expected.
Yes, of course.
You know, when people get hired, sometimes they're misled about their company's position or they have the wrong idea. Have you found situations like that?
Of course it happens. If there's someone you really want, someone you feel is going to help you turn the company around or achieve your objectives or exceed expectations for you, someone to make you look good, and that's what everybody wants, you may leave out a couple of things during that interview. For example, when I was hired to be CEO for Euro RSAG Becker, unbeknownst to me, our largest client at the time, Merck, had a letter sent to the then president. The company was being acquired by the French, so he wasn't going to reveal it. That said, you're going to be fired unless you change the whole senior staff. So 2 weeks after I was on the job as president, we got fired by Merck. And that was close to half of our business back then. There's always going to be instances where if you really want someone to come on board, you're not going to tell them all the bad stuff.
So you've got to be ready.
Absolutely. Because you're not going to know everything. That's for sure.
Okay. So you're in your new office. Maybe you're past the first 100 days. What are your first efforts going to focus on?
Exceeding expectations.
What exactly do you mean by that?
What happens for most people, they focus on restructuring. The reorg, the manufacturing plants. Who cares? I'm on the board of directors. I have a lot of shares in this firm. I want you to exceed the revenue curve. That's what you're here for. Business has been flat. You're the CEO. I want to see a jump. Look what happened at Ford. They got a great new CEO over there. His focus was not on manufacturing. Let's cut costs of Ford. But exceeding the revenue curve, Ford was losing a small fortune. Now look at it. It actually made money. That's what a board looks for. That's what shareholders want. And that has to be the focus for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Then why is there so much focus on culture? We're hearing an awful lot about the importance of corporate culture.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
What's behind that?
When there's a merger, when there's an acquisition, who gets involved with that? The banks, the private equity companies, the board. The former CEO. Those are the people who make all the money. Nobody really focuses on the cultures of the two companies. That's why over 90% of the mergers don't work out, because the cultures of the two companies were so different.
You know, it's interesting. We had Tony Hsieh of Zappos here just a few weeks ago, who spoke about how he didn't see himself as a leader or as a manager, but rather somebody who developed culture for the company. Is that a unique situation?
Not at all. I think that's what leaders are supposed to do. How do you run a company and get people to come to work every day with a smile on their face unless there's a culture they can embrace? That's what it's all about. Do you want to come to work for a company where you hate the mission and hate the purpose? So Mr. Hsieh, being very, very modest, he did a great job.
Exactly. I think you're absolutely right. And a lot of executives now are pointing to culture as almost the be-all and end-all. It's culture that creates a better profitable company and leads to increased revenue.
Exactly right.
And they're talking more about productivity.
Yes. Happy employees produce. Unhappy employees keep looking at their wristwatches. When can I get the heck out of here? So you want a culture of productivity.
Okay. Well, let's talk about how you position the company to lead your industry or your field.
The first thing you have to do is, as Jim Collins has said in all the books he's written, invite the B and C players off the bus, bring the A players onto your bus, and tell them where to sit. That's what leaders have to do. And you go back and look at the great CEOs. You have to have the courage to get the Bs to work to be As, but to get the Cs out as quickly as you can and just surround yourself with A's.
What if you become the head of a company and it is already at the top of the industry it's in? How do you keep it there?
You have to be paranoid about staying on that competitive edge. You have to read more than anyone else can read, what your competitors are doing, the war games exercises to really dig deep to find out what your competitors are doing. Are they recruiting from your firm? Anyone who says a great leader of a top company who's not paranoid really hasn't been within industry for long.
You mentioned war games. What are these?
The war games exercise is where you actually know through probing and through people what your competitors are doing, who has done what, who they are, and what you anticipate their next moves to be. Know how they're going to come at you, but do things to outflank them.
And you can do that looking at your industry or your top competitors?
You do it by intelligence, by hiring people who can get in and understand what your competitors are doing by probing.
Now, in your book, you take a leader from the beginning with a company until he's actually ready to move on or retire. Now, before they're ready to leave the company, they should be grooming the next generation of leaders, succession planning.
Mm-hmm. Are you supposed to do it? Yes.
But they don't stop with their own period in office. Isn't that the case?
It's tough to leave. If you are in love with a company, if you're a founder, we know so many cases of founders. McKnight went back to Nike if he gave the company to someone else. Charles Schwab decided to leave the company and, of course, came back in a year because he couldn't stand what the successors were doing. It's my company. Look what's happened to the business since I've left. The whole culture has changed. A.G. Lafley left the company, retired, and remarried after many years. Still doing consulting, but his hand is still there in Procter. It's going to take a long time for Lafley to leave what he's done. The great innovations came under him. And we will see many, many more of these people after they decide to leave, come back. It's the founder syndrome. I hope I'm not one of them.
Okay. We've been talking about executives who are pretty successful, and I guess that would be the equivalent of an A-plus at the end of their career. So how would you describe an A-plus executive?
A-plus leaders insist on surrounding themselves with A-plus people forever. And of course, we all make mistakes in hiring people. I try now to get recruiters who dig way down below the references that are offered, way down, to understand whether this person can really work with me.
Exactly. It doesn't just happen, right?
Absolutely. And then sometimes you have to take a friend, someone you really like a lot, and say, I'm really sorry, but it's time for us to part, and replace them with someone else you have focused on as an A-plus person. But difficult as it is to part ways with people that you like, you must have the courage to do it, and you must love change. As hard as it is to love change, you have to do it.
Sandra, what are ways to stay fulfilled after you leave the business?
Unless you have a passion. I mean, real passion. Unless there's something in the next chapter of your life that you always dreamed of doing, it's very difficult. Many people have gotten involved in certain fulfilling work in the nonprofit area. Other people have decided, you know what, I've always wanted to learn more about medieval history. So I'm going back to school and I'm going to learn about medieval history. You just have to have a passion. You're going to get severely depressed unless there is something out there that you have to do.
We've been speaking to Sandra Flom, author of Big Shoes, How Successful Leaders Grow Into New Roles. Sandra, thanks so much for being with us today.
Great to be here with you, Dave. Thank you.
The American Management Association has an international presence, adding value to your organization by involving you in a global community of peers and practitioners via one of the world's most sophisticated knowledge exchange networks. Today, AMA's global reach extends from Management Center Europe in Brussels to Management Center de Mexico in Mexico City, from the Canadian Management Center in Toronto to AMA Japan in Tokyo. And since 1995, AMA has served the Chinese market through the Asia-Pacific Management Institute in Shanghai. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Gabe Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.